It was March 30th, 1996, when NPR's Scott Simon welcomed us, as always, to Weekend Edition Saturday. He outlined highlights of the morning's broadcast, and what was so special for us in our region was the feature that day on the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble and their buzz-creating production titled Letters to the Editor, 200 Years in the Life of an American Town. Scott Simon wanted to know all about the play. He made a comparison to Thornton Wilder's Our Town, and he made time for BTE members to stand before the microphones and share some of the funny, heartfelt, not quite inflammatory, but certainly pointed and provoking words of citizens of the Central Susquehanna Valley from the 1700s to the 1990s. Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard professor Robert Coles called Letters to the Editor in its book version a wonderful chronicle of democracy's life as experienced by its citizens who have been lucky indeed to live in a country where their ideas can be publicly shared. Now, two decades later, NPR has invited BTE and Letters to the Editor to return to take part in an event that will ask, what does it mean to be a good citizen? It's a live video stream panel discussion hosted by NPR's Michelle Martin, host of Weekend All Things Considered. The program will be held Tuesday, June 6th at 7 the evening at the University of Scranton and will feature highlights from Letters to the Editor with Laurie McCants and Gerard Stropnicki, two of the co-founders of the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble. Laurie and Jerry returned to the very same studio here at WVIA where they had that conversation with Scott Simon, aired on NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, March 30th, 1996. We talked here about the role theater can play in civic engagement in a community and how and why that has come to be an important part of BTE's mission.
It was some time before there were main stage pieces built from community story. Early on, we were interviewing people in nursing homes.
We did create a piece called Voices of Bloomsburg.
And we did a piece with a local poet called The Poet Among Us, Percival Roberts. But these were things that were done for like AUW groups and things like that. But our impulse was there. But as a theater company, we were primarily doing, you know, classics. And I think the, what was it, 1980 was the first time that you did a piece about us? 1980, Erica? We're getting up there when we were doing Lady Audley's Secret, a great melodrama from that period of time, and Alvina Krauss was directing us in it. It was the last thing she directed us in. But from the start, though, there was this thing about community voice and about what it is, what the place of a theater company is in a community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ms. Krauss, our teacher and mentor, she was 83 when we first came to Bloomsburg to study with her. And her perception was that theater was dying. And actually, that was incorrect. There were actually a lot of smaller theaters beginning to blossom right around that time. But her worry was that theater was dying because of movies and television. And she thought, she felt deeply, it wasn't just that she thought, she felt deeply that the future of theater would lie with particularly actors who decided to just settle in a community and make the theater happen there.
She had reason to feel that way, and that is, you know, she had been the head of the acting program at Northwestern University for decades, and her favorite students, the students, kept going to Hollywood. And so, you know, she had Patricia Neal and Charlton Heston and Jeffrey Hunter and Paula Prentice and Richard Benn, all these actors. And she had such dreams for them to be part of the theater world and to devote their talents to the stage. And it tended not to happen. These were incredibly talented, able people that had those doors open, and they went through those doors in kind of mega ways. There was a period of time when every Oscar winner was one of her students. But she felt like something was lost in that, whether she was right or not, but she was passionate about it. It was very personal to her.
And it also just happened that we were kids of the 60s. We were very much into community involvement, community engagement, collective artistic creation, and so this this kind of old-fashioned idea that she had of theater is important to the life of the community, melded in a very interesting way with our own sort of activist idea of what theater can be in terms of the community life of our area.
It was the mid-1970s when we arrived. Mm-hmm. And so that was also, if you look at the grander scope, now that we're, you know, getting up there and we're senior citizens, we can look back at this with some sort of view. But that was the back to the farm, back to the roots era, right? That there was the whole hippie movement, anti-war thing. And then as that began to sort of either collapse or mature, depending upon what you want to look at it, there was this whole going back to the garden and creating intentional communities in places that were rural. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of them were in New England and Massachusetts and Vermont and Twin Oaks and all these utopian ideals. And in a way, as I look back, I think the artists that came for BTE were that. Mm-hmm. We were an intentional community set up, as opposed to, you know, learning how to plow and grow stuff, learning and expanding on what it is to make theater in a place.
Yeah, so that led us to create theater about the place where we live. And we made this piece, Letters to the Editor, that we'll be providing some samples from. But growing from that, we got very interested in exploring the history of our region and made Hard Coal, which was about the difficult and luminous legacy of coal mining in our region. That was a main stage piece. We also created a touring school piece called Patchworks, about life in the Patch Town, focusing on a Slovak family in around the turn of the 20th century. That piece is actually one of our most popular shows. We can bring it back every 6 years, you know, when the kids have gone through the grades, and the kids just love that show. We also created a piece called Susquehanna, Mighty Muddy Crooked River of the Long Reach, about the stories, legends, history, facts, and fantasies about our incredible river.
So well, we also did flood stories twice.
Yeah, flood stories.
We keep getting flooded out in Bloomsburg. And so, you know, we've made pieces about what that is, what that means. One we did outdoors in Town Park, which was itself flooded, and one we did in a co-production with Bloomsburg University about the 2011 flood. And, you know, it was a huge community production. We had, you know, 75 people on stage and a choir. And it was a marvelous way to kind of put a closure on that event, and also to help that part of the Susquehanna Valley redefine itself, to understand that flooding is not an occasional annoyance, it is what we are, and to embrace that. And, you know, these kinds of things change how we talk about it. So for all those years, Bloomsburg never had flood protection. But when it came up again, after years of conversation, it happened. We have green space. Certain neighborhoods are not being rebuilt. We're going to be flooded again. And just to embrace that and know that, what that does in terms of uniting a community, what it does in terms of destroying a community, all in the same thing. It's both an act of loss and an act of love that occurs. And so, you know, being able to listen to the voices of a place has become, I think, important to BTE.
And when you do these pieces, you have talkbacks, you provide a forum for people to then reflect on the experience they've just had with you.
That's right. And that's actually the purpose of it. It's not to, it really doesn't have much to do with standing in a spotlight on a stage. The artists at BTE have enormous opportunity to do that all the time. The purpose of these projects is to open up that community conversation. And it really is the artist as citizen. And that, and you know, that was also central to Ivana Krauss's vision, that a theater must be built on the bedrock of concern for community. Must, period. And that if it's about showing off, or it's about, I always wanted to do this and now I get to, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. But for her, that was necessary but not sufficient in the mathematical model. And what was also necessary to complete it is this sense of citizenship, what it is to be part of a place.
And did you all come to the methods that you have discovered by trial and error?
Yeah, I would say at the start it was trial and error. However, we already knew of others around the country that were doing this kind of work. And even before the days of the internet, we managed to find ways to connect with them. People like Roadside, and that was a company in
Tennessee.
A playwright like Jo Carson, who based her theatrical work on real life stories and real life interviews.
She became my mentor.
Yeah. So there were others around the country that were working in this mode, and we found out about them and contacted them. But a lot of it was trial and error.
Yeah, a lot. And with letters to the editor, that was part of it. I mean, you know, inspired by watching community-centered work happen in various places. But it was, I don't know, I was like too shy to like listen to people, to actually interview people. That was terrifying for me. Give me a script, I was fine, right? I could direct it or I could act it. But to actually be in a room and interview people, and now that's most of my life. That's what I do all the time.
Jerry is a nationally known expert in this method now.
but at the time, one of the reasons for letters was we didn't have to talk to anybody because they were all printed, you know? And so the method of that, Laurie alluded to this earlier, but there was an earlier project. BTE was commissioned by the town of Berwick. They had a bicentennial commission. They were creating they're celebrating their 200 years. This is like 1987. This is an old town, right? So going back to 1787. Mm. And working with Lee Strimbeck primarily, she and I wrote and directed this piece that was all based on found materials. It was all letters and diaries and newspaper advertising and speeches and things, deeds. We performed all that with a community and professional cast. And it was huge, and it was ungainly, and it was a wonderful mess. But it was wonderful in its way. And in that, we found letters that we performed some of, but we started to build a file of these letters we didn't use. And it was like, wow, there's something really rich here. And I wrote a grant to the National Endowment for the Arts, without which none of this happens. That's a bit of citizenship, folks. Without the National Endowment for the Arts, none of this happens. And you think, oh, well, they're just giving to the big fancy people. No, that's not the point.
Most of it goes to rural areas.
Right. It is about finding these
rural
voices.
Rural or high poverty areas in need.
So they gave us something like $5,000 in 1991. It was not a big grant. But it was enough that I could say to the company, can I work on this for a while? And then we made some workshops. And my working on it meant getting rolls of dimes and giving them to the actors who joined the process. And we'd go up to the library and look for letters about dogs or letters about whatever across history, and began to build files and to play with them as performance texts. And we started to workshop it pretty quickly. There was support. And it took until 1996 to make the whole piece work. And then, wow, it was big for us. It got a lot of attention. It was written about everywhere. NPR did a big piece on it with Scott Simon that was recorded right here in this room. Mm-hmm. And then VIA did a television version of it that was broadcast many times. Mm-hmm. And they came and taped it live. You know, it was a live remote that they did. Boy, those were the days. And you can't do that without the Corporation of Public Broadcasting or the National Endowment for the Arts. And then it toured nationally, and off the NPR Scott Simon thing on Weekend Edition, we got a call from an agent who had talked to an editor, and they wanted to make a book. And it became a book published by Simon & Schuster in 1998. It's almost 20 years ago. But it is hundreds of letters covering two centuries of life along this river, primarily Bloomsburg, but not entirely. It goes from Wilkes-Barre to Sunbury, mm-hmm. to Harrisburg.
And what do we learn about our humanity and what interests us and what we want to sound off about, and why do we value this kind of forum?
Well, as my dad used to like to say, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, it is astonishing how the concerns of citizens remain the same from the time of even before the founding of this experimental nation that we have. And given the opportunity to speak our opinions, which we have, because it is our right. It's astonishing to see that the concerns are still the same. You know, there's concern about the fate of the nation. There's concern about neighbors. There's concern about how we treat our children. There's concern about how we treat our old folks. There's concern about the state of the roads. Too many potholes.
Well, the neighbor's house get painted. So some of it is like real, real local. There's also concern about our place in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
There's also concern about our place as spiritual beings and our relationships to God. That shows up again and again. There are concerns about the macro political world. There's a chapter in the book that is insults to every president ever. Of course, the book was published in 98, so it ends with Bill Clinton. But, you know, it would have continued. So, yeah, nothing changes. But also what's really cool, I think, is the humanity of the voices.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the people here are struggling, as you and I do every day, with what it means to be a citizen. What does that mean? How do we participate? What is our job? You know, we think of letters to the editor largely as screaming, complaining, and there's a fair share of that. But one of the things about a small town is they print every word. And so, pretty much. And so you get real native voice happening. These texts are, we found very quickly, are rich and alive with the sound of this place. And we may not agree with what the person may be saying politically, or we may see a different answer to that particular question. But the way they express themselves is an expression of soul and of heart. And it's quite beautiful. It's very deeply human.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate, but there's also a lot of love. A lot of love. And that's encouraging.
Just from a position of presenting it on stage, what are the considerations that a playwright might consider in terms of rhythm and variety of voices and mm-hmm. so forth?
Boy, it's a hard thing to think about, because these days I do a lot of work around the country in communities in stress, off their stories, and that question doesn't change from project to project, whether I'm working in Kentucky or Georgia or California or Uganda, wherever I'm working, those questions come up in terms of what those rhythms are. And it ends up exposing something about me and my own taste. You know, if I'm the person doing the adapting, or I'm the person doing the directing, I'm going to find rhythms that appeal. And it's not invented. I mean, it ends up underneath each of these pieces, and certainly underneath Letters, is the structure of a well-made play. It has a rising action and introduction of characters. It has a large dollop of humor. You don't start off with something that's going to slap you in the face. If you're going to get to really hard topics, which you always do,
mm-hmm.
always do,
mm-hmm.
they come later in the piece when you've earned it.
Mm-hmm.
They are surrounded and lifted and given what they need, which includes humor and comic relief. And then it ends in a place of hope. I think one of the most important things is I am not big on transgression for this sense of transgression. In my work in community and in Letters being one of the early key pieces, it isn't about we're smarter than anybody else as the performers. It isn't about how shocking this is and let's leave the audience shocked. I don't much like that, actually. That's not where I come from. I am about allowing the shock, certainly, and not preaching an answer, but showing a door that lets us through. Somehow, whatever that door is. And in these pieces that are collages built of many, many voices, sometimes it can be a complete switch to another voice of, you know, so if we're looking at some of the hardest community issues you can look at, the next thing might be an innocent voice that reminds us that that's also part of our world. These things aren't designed. Joe Carson would always talk about there needing to be a door out. You need a door out. If you're going to go to the dark places, you cannot leave a community to do that in that place. If you leave them in the dark place, you are creating damage. And the work that we do as artists is extraordinarily powerful. And if we create damage and leave people in a damaged state, our citizenship is horrible.
The best example of that is the ending of our play version of Letters to the Editor, which is also the epilogue in the book that came out of the play. We took the audience to some difficult places in the second act of Letters to the Editor, having to do with real hatred in our town and having to do with real disappointments in hopes for a town spirit that didn't arise when it needed to arise, etc. That was balanced with humorous stuff as well. But the final letter that was presented had to do with a child, a young boy talking about how disappointed he thought life in a small town would be friendlier, and it wasn't as friendly as he had expected. And then there was a coda of many of the characters' names and little snippets of their letters that we've gotten to know through the course of the piece. And then there was the applause. And then I got to perform this in one of the iterations. Jerry had staged the play we just used a lot of chairs in different configurations. And, you know, chairs representing all kinds of, like, levels of economic wealth or not wealth, place, etc. So chairs were the main scenic element. Well, for this epilogue, I brought out a folding lawn chair and set it up and sat down in it and looked out to the audience. And I can read this to you. Dear sir, I'm writing this to thank the Bloomsburg Police Department for bringing back my lawn chair to me. I did not report it stolen, being that it was not a very expensive chair, but it made me feel good that they took the time to find the owner of the chair. Where they found it, I do not know, but I feel very thankful to them. Mrs. John Moyle, Bloomsburg. And I always choked up when delivering that letter because I was sitting in that lawn chair looking out at our audience and just even saying thank you. I felt I was saying thank you, Bloomsburg.
Communities are hard, you know. It's hard to live together. It's hard to live together close. And we need to be reminded that it's worth it. We need to be reminded that that difficulty is worth it. And there is going to be crime, and there is going to be abuse, and there is going to be racism. And there are going to be moments when we're feeling lost and despondent. But the answer to that is in each other's eyes. And it's in each other's voices. And it's paying attention and listening. And if we can do that, we will be surprised that even in somebody that you know, politically you might want to strangle, there's love and there's care. And there's someone who you let coach your kid. And that's all part of being in a place.
That's citizenship, learning to live together.
Would you give us a sample of longer letters?
Well, you just did one, so I'll do this one.
Okay.
Yeah, this is from 1793. The Rights of Fish. Fish are a species of animals which ought to be exempt from our tyranny. They inhabit an element of their own. They encroach not on our rights, nor do they destroy our property. We have no claim on them for their food, nor can we have any prejudice at their situation. To see a harmless and inoffensive creature tortured and dragged from the bosom of its home, its companions, and its attachments, to feed the luxurious appetite of man, is a scene so inconsistent to a rational mind that it ought to be discountenanced with the whole force of precept and example. Besides, angling, though every day practiced on the banks of the Susquehanna, is an unmanly and ungenerous sport. To beguile to death under the semblance of giving sustenance is mean and treacherous and beneath the dignity of a man of noble and tender feelings. There are animals whose natural ferocity and destructive disposition require correction in death, but to see the harmless trout driven from one end of its habitation to the other in the most agonizing distress till spent and breathless, he yields to his destiny and the savage arts of man. MS, the Sunbury and Northumberland Gazette, October 9th, 1793. And we thought we invented animal rights, right? Mm-hmm.
Gerard Stropnicki and Laurie McCants, two of the founders of the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, talking with us about the original theatrical production, Letters to the Editor,
that had its premiere in 1996 at the Alvina Krauss Theater, Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble's home in downtown Bloomsburg. The play has toured nationally and was published in book form by Simon & Schuster, thanks to an interview done by a different Simon, NPR's Scott Simon, on Weekend Edition Saturday in March of 1996, with members from BTE right here in the very studio where we had this conversation 21 years later. Laurie McCants and Jerry Stropnicki were invited by NPR to take part in an event 1 week from tonight, Tuesday, June 6th, at the University of Scranton in the Royal Theater at 7 p.m. What does it mean to be a good citizen? It's a live video stream panel discussion featuring nationally known commentators as well as regional residents with local stories of civic engagement and good citizenship. And Laurie and Jerry will present highlights from letters to the editor as part of the evening. The host is Michelle Martin, anchor of Weekend All Things Considered, and you're invited to join the conversation at the Royal Theater at the University of Scranton 1 week from this evening at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, June 6th. Tickets are available online at nprevents.org, nprevents.org. There's also an easy link on our website, wvia.org. Michelle Martin, host of Weekend All Things Considered, has been a journalist for more than 25 years at The Washington Post and Wall Street Journal, a regular panelist on Washington Week, and now with Bill Moyers for PBS. She was also a correspondent for ABC's Nightline for 10 years, winning an Emmy for her reporting on the ABC News magazine Day One. Now at NPR, in addition to anchoring Weekend All Things Considered, Michelle Martin hosts the NPR event series Going There, traveling across the country to engage Americans in important conversations about important issues. And they've chosen to come to Scranton on June 6th, and you are invited to join NPR and special guests at 7 in the evening at the University of Scranton in the Royal Theater. Tickets available online at nprevents.org, nprevents.org, and there is an easy link on the WVIA website, wvia.org, wvia.org. What does it mean to be a good citizen? A live video stream panel discussion featuring nationally known commentators, regional commentators, and people who are involved in civic engagement. Michelle Martin is the host, and it's Tuesday, June 6th at 7 p.m. at the Royal Theater at the University of Scranton. For more information online, nprevents.org, nprevents.org, or wvia.org.